This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. For a lot of people, the American dream means that their children will do better than they did. But for some folks, especially Blacks and Latinos, that's not happening. As we're reporting in our series Losing Ground, those groups actually started gaining economic ground in the 1960s and 70s compared to whites, but those gains have begun to erode. CPR's Andrea Dukakis has this story about a father and daughter in Pueblo who've had very different experiences.
When John Carrillo was a boy, he came across a word he had never heard before in his life. He had no idea what it meant. It wasn't a fancy word. He'd just never heard it before. The word was vacation.
You know, we used to play softball, and during the summer we had like three white kids that played with us. And I could remember when we were playing ball, you know, they would... He says, we can't play next week because we're going to be gone. Well, where are you going? He says, well, we're going on vacation. I'm like, wow, what's that?
Carrillo's dad was born in Mexico, his mom in Colorado. Carrillo grew up dirt poor, literally, in a small house with dirt for a driveway and an outhouse instead of a toilet. But things were changing. Pueblo in the 1960s and 70s was a place where there were lots of jobs, jobs that paid well, even if you didn't have a lot of education. Carrillo got work at the local steel mill. There were so many workers, they had to park at a distant lot and walk through this long tunnel under the highway to the plant.
You always wondered if you'd run into an animal or something in here, because there used to be, like, you know, you'd see deer in there, foxes. At one time, they said they see a mountain lion in there. I never did see one.
Carrillo's job was to make train tracks. He and a crew would lift a long track and turn it so that the ends could be cut to make them smooth and square for welding. And every week, he brought home a paycheck. He bought a house with a paved driveway, and his family went on vacations.
We took him to Disneyland. And we'd go fishing on trips and stuff like that. And, you know, we'd just do things that we never did.
Eventually, the steel industry changed. It was cheaper to make steel in Japan and China. And in Carrillo's unit, there were new machines that didn't require a crew of men. Thousands of jobs went away. That's one of the reasons Blacks and Latinos are falling behind in Colorado. A lot of them were working jobs like these that disappeared. Carrillo isn't nostalgic. Stepping out of that tunnel at the end of the day, he says, was like getting out of jail. It was back-breaking work. Many times, Carrillo had to visit the plant's infirmary.
I spent a lot of times in there. Very many. I lost a finger. I had my knees messed up, my arm. A lot of injuries.
Carrillo ended up retiring early because of his injuries. At the end, he was making $70,000 a year. And the way things were supposed to go, his kids would have an easier life with more opportunities and options. But that's not exactly the way it's working out.
We've got about eight today, I guess.
This is John Carrillo's daughter, Gina Rosales. She runs a daycare out of her house. One little girl is in a high chair having a snack. The rest of the kids, ages 1 to 4, are down in the basement.
I would wish it'd be any easier than this, but, you know, I'm working from 5:30 to 5:30 or 6 Monday through Friday. It's a 12, 13-hour day. When my children go home, my daycare children, my day doesn't end. I still got cleaning and mopping and sweeping.
And then her own kid comes home who needs attention, too. Rosales' father moved from poverty to the middle class, but Rosales hasn't really moved forward. Things aren't necessarily getting worse, but they're not getting much better. She went to college but didn't finish. She's got a job, but she's earning less than her dad did. The data shows this is happening across the country, but especially in Colorado, and especially for minorities. Rosales says running a daycare has worked for her, but if daycare wasn't an option, she's not sure what she'd do.
I would have to work harder to sustain my lifestyle than, you know, like my dad did. He was able just to get a laboring job. I don't even think he was out of high school at that point. So I think it's harder. I think it is harder.
Rosales isn't complaining. She's got a daughter in college in Denver, and she's making a living. But so far, she hasn't been able to move the needle forward the way her dad did. Andrea Dukakis, Colorado Public Radio News.
And Andrea joins us in the studio now. Andrea, all week we'll be talking about this growing gap between whites and blacks and whites and Latinos. Again, we call this series Losing Ground. This gap shows up in college education. It's also in home ownership. Today, we're going to focus, though, on the income gap. Tell us about that.
So during the civil rights movement in Colorado, Latinos and blacks were earning a little more than 70% of whites. By 2010, that had dropped to about 50% for Latinos and 60% for blacks. And this information comes from iNews, which is based in Colorado. It's a nonprofit investigative news service, and they crunch these numbers from census data.
That means in comparison to whites, blacks and Latinos are worse off today than they were during the struggles of the civil rights movement.
Yes. And in fact, this state was one of the most equitable places in the country back during the civil rights movement. Minorities were catching up to whites in income. Now the gaps in Colorado are wider than the rest of the country. And we'll talk about that in a bit.
Well, the story we just heard from you was about a Latino family, and the father, John Carrillo, grew up without a lot of money in Pueblo, but he got a job at the steel mill and made a really good living. His daughter, Gina, though, hasn't moved up the economic ladder the way he did.
Yeah, and it's important to note that just like for whites, blacks and Latinos in general make more now than they did back then. It's just that there's this wider disparity between the races now. So as we said in the story, life isn't necessarily getting worse, but it's not getting much better either.
Well, to illustrate this, you went to the steel mill in Pueblo. Why?
Well, Pueblo and the mill gave Latino workers the chance to move up to the middle class without having to have a college degree, not even a high school degree. And I spoke with Ray Kogosik from Pueblo. He was a congressman from Colorado in the area in the late 70s and early 80s. And he spoke about the heyday in Pueblo back then. He describes it very nostalgically as a real melting pot with whites, blacks, and Latinos working together and making a good living.
It was just a working man's town, a steel town, a town where people were able to get together in the evening. Men would stop by Gus's Tavern after work and have some beers and shots, and it was an idyllic situation.
So at the height of the plant's production, it had about 13,000 workers. At its low point in the 90s, it had about 1,300, and it continues to operate on a smaller scale now. Some argue that the union negotiated so many benefits that it was too expensive for the company and it couldn't compete with Japan and other places. But others argue the union was a reason these workers were able to make it to the middle class in the first place. A Russian company owns it now, and more of the jobs require education and training than they did before. I spoke with another Ray. His name is Ray Aguilera, and he's a former Pueblo City Council president, about what's required these days for jobs at the plant.
You have to have some training now. You have to be able to read at an 11th grade level. I watch, you know, in the newspaper every day what they're asking for, and they're asking for people who have, you know, specialized training.
And those without specialized training or higher education have been struggling since places like the steel mill shrunk their operations, right?
Yeah, across the nation and in Colorado, the loss of manufacturing jobs really hit minorities hard. Back in 1970 in Colorado, 1 in 4 Latinos had manufacturing jobs. Today, it's 1 in 10. And I spoke with Alan Berube at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. for this story. And he talked about how critical manufacturing was in the 1960s and 70s to helping minorities gain equal ground with whites.
Manufacturing was always an industry that employed both whites and blacks, and even at the time, Latinos, in more equal measure than, say, you know, the emerging industries of today.
And as we said earlier, Colorado was among the most equitable states back during the civil rights movement. And now you might say it's less equitable than the rest of the country. Berube says there's a reason for this.
I think in a lot of ways, Colorado has undergone an even faster transition in its economic structure than the nation as a whole. Shedding industrial jobs that it had in the 1960s and 1970s at a faster rate than the national average, and growing these kind of new economy industries in information technology, communications, financial services.
And of course, these new jobs require more education, college degrees. And the census data we're talking about shows not only a growing income gap, but also a gap between whites and blacks and whites and Latinos when it comes to college degrees. So it's all tied closely to education.
Okay, there's the loss of manufacturing jobs, the lack of education. What else is causing this income gap?
We've spoken to a lot of people for this series, and they point to different factors. Some say it's the loss of affirmative action policies and other public policies. Some say it's so many more Blacks and Latino households headed by single parents, and one income just isn't the same as two. I also heard from folks that they worry that some of the energy behind the civil rights movement has waned. Here's LaDawn Sullivan, whose grandmother Ruth Denny was a civil rights leader in Denver.
When the civil rights movement kind of came to a culmination in the late 60s, there was kind of like this, we've arrived, we've overcome this. And some folks, especially the older generations, like, you've overcome nothing. We've only gone like one step. There's like 15 more steps to go.
What are the key solutions here? What did you hear from the folks you talked to for this story?
Well, there are lots of ideas. People say more kids should be going to college and the state needs to improve on that. But Alan Berube, again, of the Brookings Institution, says there's more to it.
I think if we want to do something about the issue, it's not enough to say that everybody should just go get a four-year college education or a master's degree or a PhD. There are a lot of jobs still in America, in manufacturing, but also in other kind of local serving industries, machining, services to keep your plumbing working and your electricity working. These sorts of industries don't require a four-year college degree, but they're going to be in demand for a long time, and they tend to pay, you know, decent wages to folks who don't have a four-year college degree.
Berube says the country needs to think of other pathways besides college, no matter what your race. Sort of reinvent vocational education for the next generation. And he says that's one way to correct the imbalances in the country. He says by 2050, almost half of the working age population will be non-white. So it's not only critical to these minority groups, it's also critical to the country's economic future.
Andrea, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ryan.
That's CPR's Andrea Dukakis. Her story is part of Losing Ground, a series we're airing this week. Tomorrow, The Education Gap. This former Denver school board member says he can predict how well a child in Colorado will do in life based on his mother's education and his family income.
And until we correct that, our democracy's in jeopardy.
We'd like your take on these stories through our Public Insight Network. Go to cpr.org. You'll see Public Insight in the column on the left. Click there and then choose Losing Ground to share what you know.